The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in his Washington Times Communities column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for The Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but why does a loving God allow suffering and evil in the world? And that's a good question and a broad question. And in a few weeks, I will be taking an entire program to deal with that question in detail. In the meantime, I must say, much of the suffering inflicted upon human beings comes from human beings. Not always. There was a horrible hurricane on the East Coast. Our heart goes out to the people. There are some things people can't help, but a lot of times people are suffering because of things they can help. Most of man's suffering is at the hands of man. When people steal, when people kill, when people refuse to feed the poor because they're so greedy, when people are racist. Well, I remember the word of God, in which God says, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not murder. And there are other commandments in the Bible. It's not just the top 10. The Bible commands us to feed the poor in many places. The Bible speaks against racism. And when human beings violate those standards, it does not convince me that God doesn't exist. On the contrary, it convinces me that God knew just exactly what he was talking about when he issued his commands. Well, today, we are on the brink of a major election, an election that is bound to change the landscape of our country permanently or restore us to the freedom that was once ours. And if you think you have as much freedom as you always have, that's only because somebody is boiling a frog slowly. And we have some choices ahead of us, choices that could put off a lot of suffering. Many people are struggling because they made the wrong choice 4 years ago. They may not even see the connection between the choice they made, but they're struggling because they have no job. Yet they voted for a man who hates our free market system. Many people are concerned about the First Amendment freedoms of an American citizen who was arrested for making an anti-Muslim video, and yet they elected a man who openly supported things like the Fairness Doctrine or hate speech legislation. Should that not have been a clue that it would come to this? Today, I'm joined by three of my rotating co-hosts at the same time. We've got an ensemble here. It's good to have them. They are each going to make one last-ditch effort to give a last-pitch effort and talk you out of voting Barack Obama in for a second term. Please welcome Dana Wright, Matt Simone, and Mike Friedenberg. Hello to all of you.
Hello.
Hi, Bob.
Now, I do have other co-hosts. We've got a lot of co-hosts on the Bob Siegel Show that are not with us today. Kevin Conover, one of our newer co-hosts, wanted to be here, but he's teaching a class. And then Lori Lewis, Mark Boobian, and Greg Jarvis do our pop culture and religious shows. They don't like politics. Of course, neither does Dana, but she's brave enough to be here anyway. Hello, Dana.
Thanks, Bob.
You're such a good sport. I promise I won't make you do this anymore.
Good.
Okay, well, back in 2008, we did on the Bob Siegel Show a satirical sketch. We do a lot of those, but this one was entitled Barack Wants to Be a Millionaire. So today, we take a trip down memory lane, and we're going to replay this favorite. Now, although the subject matter is still important, sometimes humor makes the point even better than a serious discussion. But it is a little dated because we're dealing with what was then candidate and Senator Obama rather than President Obama. But after this Tuesday, it will be even more dated, so I figured we better play it so we can enjoy it one last time. Well, hopefully one last time. Hopefully this guy will fade into the backdrop of history. At the end of this sketch, you're going to hear by recording Bob Siegel from 2008 take us into a break. But after that, brand spanking new and live, Bob Siegel from 2012 will return. This is Quantum Physics and the Bob Siegel Show. Anyway, here is Barack Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Welcome to Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? I'm your host, Regis Philbin. Our first guest today is Barack Obama. How you doing today, Barack?
Hi, Regis. Great to be here.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a U.S. Senator from Illinois and the nominee of the Democratic Party for the 2008 presidential election.
Presidential election? Quite an ambition. I'll bet you'd like to earn some money for your campaign.
Sure would, Regis. With campaign finance reform, I have little choice but to do it this way.
Well, this is as good a way as any. The money is still green. We'll start with an easy one. For $1,000, what is the capital of Colorado?
C.
No, not the capital letter, Barack. The capital city.
Oh, yes, of course. The capital is Denver.
No, Barack, you're supposed to wait for the choices. That was correct, but you need to wait for the choices. That's okay. We just won't count that one. Let's put a fresh question on the board. For $1,000, a few weeks ago, Russia attacked Georgia. Exactly what is Georgia? A, the state between Florida and South Carolina. B, the theme song from Designing Women. C, one of four singers in a female version of the Beatles. D, a former part of the Soviet Union freed after the Cold War.
Wow, Regis, that's a tough question. You know, can I take a second to tell you a story about my grandmother?
I'm afraid that's not going to help you tonight, Barack. You're going to need to answer the question.
Regis, you know, I think I'm going to have to take a lifeline.
Okay, which lifeline would you like to take?
Let's poll the audience.
Okay, audience, cast your votes now. 90% say D, a former part of the Soviet Union. 80% said they think you're pretty stupid. Never mind.
I guess I'll have to go with the audience.
The audience is correct. You just won $1,000. Now, for $10,000. In 1971, a terrorist group tried to blow up our Capitol building. What was the name of this terrorist group? A, Al-Qaeda. B, Hamas. C, the Weathermen. Or D, the Letterman.
Regis, I don't know where you're getting these questions, but I think I'm going to have to phone a friend. My buddy Bill Ayers knows all about terrorism.
Let's get Bill Ayers on the phone right now.
Hello?
Am I talking with Bill Ayers?
Speaking.
Hi, Bill. This is Regis Philbin. How are you tonight?
Doing great, Regis.
I'm here with your friend Barack Obama. He already has $1,000 and he's going for $10,000.
Fantastic. I know a few groups that would love a donation.
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves. First, he has to earn the money. Go ahead, Barack, starting now.
Hey, Bill, that terrorist group you were a part of, what was it called? A, Al-Qaeda?
You don't have to name them, Barry.
B, Hamas?
I already know the name of the group.
C, the Weathermen?
Sheesh, what an imbecile.
Or D, the Letterman?
It's C, Weathermen.
Are you sure?
Positive, you moron.
Gee, thanks, Bill. Okay, Regis. C, the Weathermen. Final answer.
C is correct. You just won $10,000.
Well, ignorance is fun on a game show. Unfortunately, this man is a contestant for something far more important, the presidency. What kind of president will he be? We'll discuss that when we return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Thank you.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170. 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm joined today by three of my regular rotating co-hosts, but they're here at the same time, Dana Wright, Matt Simone, and Mike Friedenberg. Now, we're going to start with Dana. Dana, you came on a couple of months ago and very bravely did a two-part show with me. You can still find these on our archives. Dana came on and confessed that she had voted for Barack Obama in 2008. She's a very she's a very sweet person.
Thanks,
I can
Matt.
Vouch for her. No, but here's
love
what,
you too.
Here's what's interesting. Dana's a very intelligent person. She's a high school principal. She has a master's degree, but sometimes people just don't have time to get involved with politics. Well, anyway, she shared this story, but what we're doing is we're making our last ditch. This is the last ditch, last pitch. So I'm going to ask you, Dana, to maybe just encapsulate a little bit, review a few of the points that you made a couple of months ago, because I thought you had some very insightful things to say. Let me just start. But what is it? Two questions. What is it that caused you to vote for Barack Obama in the first place? And what changed your mind? Because I know there are other people that are on the fence, and they might have voted him for the same reasons that you did, but perhaps they haven't discovered some of the things you've discovered these last 4 years.
Well, I think, first of all, it's important to start with the fact that if you're not somebody that follows politics, studies it, really looks for the answers, then it's very easy to be fooled. It's very easy to not come to the best conclusion for our country. When I voted 4 years ago, I really thought I was doing a good thing. Had not a clue in the world that it wasn't a good vote. And part of that is because I wasn't even aware that there were different media sources. Again, I don't like politics. I try to listen to it, and in a very short time, it is depressing. I just rather not face it. So I would often deal with it by just tuning it out. That unfortunately left me uninformed and really not aware of what Barack Obama actually stood for. I didn't even really discover he was in office for a while before I even started really learning and understanding about that. And it took a long time. It took the opportunity to be able to ask a lot of questions, because here's the thing that happens to those of us that aren't politically minded. We're watching the news and snippets and just, you know, small parts. But what we don't understand is that the mass media is not portraying a lot of the truth about Barack Obama and what's going on, and truth about other things in our government. And that to me is just amazing to realize that the national media is not telling us the truth. Just
and when you
is,
say national media, you mean the conventional ABC, NBC, CBS,
the typical ones. I think
NPR,
a lot of us watch. Right. Yeah, we think we're seeing the news when they're reporting. We think we're really seeing it. Until I started watching Fox News and being able to really ask questions, did I understand a different side of it? Also, I still, as I hear things about from Fox, from other people that are more informed and more politically minded, as I hear things from you, a lot of it still is very difficult for me to believe, because it doesn't seem right. It just seems wrong. And I've always had the belief system that our country's been great. We've done good things. We've been truthful. And so it really rocks a lot of my core perceptions about the country.
Sometimes something, if it sounds outrageous, we think it's not true. But the
Correct.
Phenomena that something can be outrageous, that somebody can have outrageous behavior, and that behavior is real, and yeah. that it's not a conspiracy theory, sometimes that's not what we're expecting to see.
Right, exactly. So that's how I even came to voting for Obama in the first place.
What did he say or do that seemed appealing to you, obviously?
Well, clearly the hope and change. I mean, growing up in this country, I clearly remember just feeling very patriotic, feeling very free to express my belief in God in this country, to be able to talk about God. I never felt shut down before. I never felt like being patriotic was a problem. In fact, it was quite the opposite. You wanted to be patriotic. It was easy to be that way. But now I feel like I have to apologize sometimes. I have to, I feel like I have to, you know, kind of quell my patriotism. It just, when I look around at things now, it just feels different. And I don't like how that feels. And I didn't realize that a lot of that is coming from where our country is right now. By not being involved in politics, by not being informed, I actually helped get the country in a place where we are. And I didn't realize that.
Well, Dana, I really appreciate your courage for being so candid, because I know there are a lot of people that are in your shoes or where your shoes were back in 2008. Were there one or two seminal issues about Obama that really started turning you?
I think his position on abortion was a big one. I wasn't even aware of any of that before probably about a year and a half ago. I also did not understand any of the background about how he has a real different philosophy about how he wants our country to look. He's systematically putting things in place that are, I think, making the government much more involved and in charge of people, instead of people really being able to have the independence and the wherewithal to step up and do for themselves.
I know that the movie by Dinesh D'Souza about Barack Obama also had a strong impact on you. That's not in the theaters, but it's available by video and people can download it. I think it may even be a free download, but either way, I know it at least doesn't cost much. Maybe tell our audience a little bit again about that movie, because there's a couple of days, folks, you can still go and you can see this movie.
Yeah, and I would really recommend it, especially for people that are maybe still on the fence, or even for people like me that that voted for Obama before, but now you're going to do something different. And it really does, it helps solidify for me and put in order the history of where Barack came from. Again, not being a political person, I didn't really study it or follow it. And over the last few years, I've learned a lot. I've watched a lot. I see things very differently now. And that movie really helped put it together and put it, just really brought it together. I was especially interested in several of the interviews that were going on. Impressed with Dinesh and in how he portrayed things. He clearly was just being very truthful, and
he was amiable.
He wasn't angry. He was just simply putting the facts out there, and it put the whole picture together for me. I thought the interview with Barack Obama's brother was fascinating. And hearing what his own brother said was just really profound for me.
Yeah, that question of am I my brother's keeper took on
a whole new meaning.
I remember you also shared on one of the two shows you were on that a little bit of advice for people who follow politics more and the way they talk about it with people who don't follow politics, because people are filtering words they hear through their own sensory equipment. Can you speak to that again a little bit?
Well, I think first of all, remembering that somebody who is like me isn't in the political world because they're ignorant, or you know, just it's a choice. It's difficult for some of us to really deal with the politics. It actually can depress me. So I try not to be depressed and try to avoid it.
And
but
when you run a school all day as a principal putting out fires, you don't want to come
a lot
home
of
and
issues.
Turn
yeah.
on the news and be depressed. So
exactly.
Who can blame you for feeling that way?
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's not an excuse for not being informed. But for somebody like me, just remembering that that's first of all where we come from. The politics are difficult for us, that it's possible that we don't know there are other sources, and we may not be listening to the best sources or the sources that are giving the real truth about what's going on, and that people are very protective about what they believe. They get defensive quickly. And so when you're having conversations with people and you're sharing information, share it in a compassionate way, in, again, it kind of the Dinesh way, very calm, and just giving people a chance to take in what they've heard, process it, and then ask more questions. I didn't do very well on this. As much as I sat here and shared, you know, some tips about that, I had a chance to talk to my college-age daughter a week ago. I was not very good at it, I realized. And it is, it's hard to stay calm, and it's hard to, when you're working with somebody who doesn't understand, it, you can get to that frustration level really quickly. So
well, you need to be careful who you hang around with. That's the problem.
Yeah, exactly. I know.
Especially a family member, though. That can be very hard.
It is. And so we agreed to disagree, and we moved on. But boy, it was intense. And so I've realized now I need to really practice these skills, too. As much as I'm saying this is the way to do it, I need to practice that as well. So it's not easy to talk to somebody about this. It is very personal to people.
But for the record, you said this last time, and I'd love it if you said this again, if you still think it's true. In all the years, you knew me, I explained Obama in a nice way to you, right?
You have been extremely patient and have given many, many hours to conversations answering my questions. Okay. Yes.
Let me bring Matt and Mike in here.
Oh, man, I don't know about that.
That's true.
Totally loaded.
She said it last time without me asking her. Okay. All I did was ask her to repeat it this time. But the first, Mike and Matt, without naming names, do you have people in your lives, friends, family, who are maybe in a position where Dana was in 2008, where you've tried... Or I know there's some people you just go, maybe I just can't discuss politics with them. But are there any that you've found reachable, but you've found you have to really walk on eggshells a little bit while you're doing it?
Well, absolutely. There's many of people that I work with that I've had discussions with. And fortunately, I've had a period of time to talk with a number of people, but certainly not all people in the office. And frankly, at some of the people in my office, I've just been, you know, told to back off. And I've been trying to be, you know, tactful and things like that, but they just do not want to have their worldview challenged. And, you know, you can pray and you continue to establish credibility with them as being, you know, a person that cares about them. But a lot of times if you just meet somebody, you're not going to have the credibility to be able to do this. I just don't think you're going to be. You certainly should try, but, you know, in some cases you're not.
So they say, hey, Mike's a nice guy and Mike seems to understand his job and he seems to know how to fix my computer. So maybe he knows what he's talking about with this other stuff too, and I can give him a chance.
And you treat the person with dignity and respect. And if you do that over some period of time, you know, they may be more willing to talk about something that challenges their worldview. And as Dana was saying, that is very difficult. We all have a tendency to screen out information that contradicts what we want to believe and hear things that we do want to believe.
Okay,
so everybody's like that.
So Biff on Back to the Future wouldn't have done it the right way. Hello, McFly, anybody home? That's probably not the correct way to do it.
Probably not.
More like, hello, McFly, is anybody home? Okay, I want to get your take on this too, Matt. When we return, I am here with three of my favorite co-hosts, Dana Wright, Matt Simone, Mike Friedenberg. It's our last ditch for a last pitch. Don't vote for Obama. I'm saying it really nicely, but please, don't. It didn't work out real well the first time. We'll be right back.
This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539, WNS Electric.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Tuesday night is election night, which means some of you listening to the show on the internet and not in real time hopefully will be an obsolete show by then, but who knows? It might just drag on and on. I think I'm pretty committed to not talking about politics next week, no matter what happens. But if people are accusing others of stealing the election, I might have to say something. But I am hoping that throughout most of this Thanksgiving, Christmas season, we'll move on to other things because our country has moved on to other things. Matt, I had thrown out a question to Mike, and I wanted to throw it out to you too, because Dana had talked about how she used to feel when people discussed politics. Do you have some people in your life that you've had to learn to kind of temper the way you say things?
Well, I have a really unique situation in that a lot of people I talk to are clients. And so they're paying me for my advice. And so I have this credibility already built in. And so
it gives the phrase a nickel's worth of advice a whole new meaning.
Yeah. You know, so I've been known to push some buttons and, you know, feel where people are out and then try and just take them down a common sense approach to things, because I honestly believe people just don't know what they believe. And if you don't know what you believe, how can you make a good decision regarding anything? And that could be financial, it could be political, or anything in life. So,
okay, well, we had given Dana a chance to kind of give her last passionate play. I want to give you your chance now. What you come on, and we've done several shows about the situation in our country and Obama. What do you want to say to people as we arrive at this 11th hour?
Well, I guess I'm going to take the direct approach. Obviously, Bob told you not to vote for the incumbent. I personally think that our current president is basically a narcissist. I believe he's arrogant. I don't believe he has the ability to delegate.
Okay, now, define narcissist, because some people are so narcissistic, they even know if they're narcissists.
Yeah, they're self-absorbed, okay? They just believe that they are above all things, know all things, and able to do all things. Sort of like what we should have a feeling about God. And some people believe that maybe they're just a step below God.
Well, you know, I heard Obama used to be an atheist until he discovered he was God.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll reserve comment on that one. I'm going to reserve comment on that one. So, you know, so I don't think he has executive sense. I don't think he's a manager. I mean, we can just look at the botched deficit with Congress. We can use at our loss of our credit rating. But I'm going to go to something maybe a little bit different. Three areas I want to distinctly hit today. I mentioned once before, last time I was on, Dennis Prager, and I know Bob and I both respect him and appreciate the work he does. But he said that Obama and the Democratic Party have a holy trinity, and that is class, gender, and race. And so I'd like to look at those things. So let's look at gender. People believe that the president has a high opinion of women. So let's consider the following. This is what's happened during this campaign. He has sent out an e-card, and the e-card has said, vote like your lady parts depend on it, because it kind of does. Is that not classy? That has got to be as classy as you're going to get.
It's about as classy as
I find that offensive.
Michael Moore.
Thank you. Thank you. And then wait, it gets better. Then there's another advertisement. It went like this. If you can't trust me with my body, how can I trust you with my country? I mean, literally, wow. I mean, where are they coming from? Well, it goes on. How about the latest one is where they had a young woman on an advertisement comparing voting for Obama like her first sexual contact with a man.
I saw that. That was disgusting.
I mean, so here you have somebody that is so in touch with women that he only thinks the thing they're concerned about is their body parts and whether they're going to have abortions or birth control.
It's a one-dimensional view of women. It's actually a demeaning view of women to think that they're such simpletons that they only care about that one issue.
Right, but the rubber has to meet the road somebody, because we could sort of blame the president for that or his party or other people for those advertisements. But how about this one? Okay, let's talk about equality. The statistics are, in the White House, women with the same job as a man in the White House are actually paid 18% less. How's
really?
That for equality? Yeah. Hmm. Okay, I'm going to go one farther. Anita Dunn, who is the former White House communication director, has gone on record saying that the White House was a classic example of a hostile workplace for women. How can this guy be so in touch with women? How can he fool the women out there that he's the president for women?
Well, she's the one that said Mao Tse-Tung is her hero. So if even she found it hostile, it must have really been hostile.
You know, and then let's look at this. Unemployment for women has increased. There's 500,000 fewer jobs. There's 25 million women who are in poverty. That's increased by 3.6 million people. That's unbelievable.
That is.
You know, and so we're talking about the ladies. Oh, okay. But I'm going to just throw this. This is a little fun tip, though. So just in case you think that we just think women are about their emotions and they can't control themselves, there is a study that just came out from the University of Texas in San Antonio. And they said if you're ovulating during the election, you may have no choice but to vote for Barack Obama. Because you, when you're ovulating, you feel sexier. And because of that, you will vote for him because of your access to birth control and abortion. How's that for good stuff?
They are going to put Saturday Night Live skits out of business with this, that you can't make up news
again,
like this anymore.
Unbelievable.
I know. And you know what? And it's like, and you wonder where our money goes, okay? Mm-hmm. It's our tax dollars to pay for that kind of stuff. So, okay, but let's go. So enough with gender. Let's go to race. But before I go to race, I'd like to do a little bit of a history lesson for all you people out there in regard to the reality of who really helped minorities. So I'm going to tell you some facts, and you can check them out if you want to. The
fact Matt, you're always confusing people with the facts when you come on this program.
I know. You know what I mean? It's sort of like, you know, I'm a really lover of truth, you know, and I must go back to our teachings, but let's go. So let's start with this. The Republican Party was founded primarily to oppose slavery, and the Republicans eventually abolished slavery. It was the Democratic Party that fought them and tried to maintain and expand slavery. Now, I know that was 150 years ago, but the simple fact of the matter, it was the Republican Party that started this all. Now, let's go on to another fact. During the Civil War era, the Radical Republicans, that's right, the Radical Republicans were given that name because they wanted to not only end slavery, but also to endow the freed slaves with full citizenship, equality, and rights. Is that a radical idea? Republican Party. Let's go on. Lincoln. His vice president at that time, during the time of his assassination, was Andrew Johnson. He was strongly pro-union and also a pro-slavery. He was a Democrat who was chosen.
He was pro-union and pro-slavery, not pro-Confederacy and pro-slavery?
Yeah, he was pro-union.
So there's a dichotomy.
Yeah, and he was chosen as a compromise running mate so that Lincoln would be able to pull some Democrats in. Well, after Lincoln's assassination, Johnson thwarted Republican efforts in Congress to recognize the civil rights of free slaves. And the Southern Democrats continued to throw any such for nearly a century. So they were trying to inhibit these. It goes on. The Ku Klux Klan was originally and primarily an arm of the Southern Democratic Party.
Well, we had a guy, Robert Byrd, not too long ago, was an ex-Klan member and just treated with open arms by the Democratic Party.
Absolutely. In the 1950s, President Eisenhower, a Republican, integrated into the United States military and promoted civil rights for all minorities. He pushed for a Civil Rights Act of 1957. And one of Eisenhower's primary political opponents in that year was none other than Lyndon Johnson, who was president when we passed the historic Civil Rights Act of 1964. But at that time, he was the Democratic Senate Majority Leader, and he was actually opposed to that particular act. Now, let's talk about the act itself in 1967.
Okay, so we're talking about race and class and gender. We'll be back with that when we return. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
Your kids ask you questions about God and the Bible that you can't answer? Sign yourself or your child up for a class with lots of solid answers at educateforlife.org before someone else gives them the wrong answers. Are you tired of not knowing what to say when your friends and family ask you questions about God and the Bible? Get equipped by signing up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone asks you, "How do you know the Bible's true?" do you say something like, "I just know it is"? If you're tired of giving lame answers, sign up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone says that God isn't real, wouldn't it be fun to prove that he is? Quickly, like a verbal ninja? By using science and logic. Sign up for a class at educateforlife.org with Christian apologetics teacher Kevin Conover, and you'll learn how to do that. educateforlife.org.
When the truth is found to be lies, and all the joy within you dies, don't you want somebody to love? Don't you need somebody to love? Wouldn't you love somebody to love? You better find somebody to love.
We all need somebody to love, but we all need a country to love. And if you want to be able to continue loving this country, I'm telling you, another 4 years of this administration, oh, it'll still be called the United States of America. It will still exist, but that may just be about the only similarity. I'm here with Matt Simone, Mike Friedenberg, Dana Wright, three of my regular co-hosts in at one time. Last ditch and last pitch before Tuesday. Matt, you were talking about the Holy Trinity of Obama. Tell us again what it is. Unholy Trinity, I guess we should say.
Okay, so we're talking class, gender, and race. I was talking about race. The Democratic Party has been the party of the minority. But did you see the last job studies? The unemployment rate for blacks is at 14.3, so it's up a point from the last month. And so,
oh, darn that George Bush. He did it again.
Yeah, yeah. I don't quite understand it. You know,
a very long reach of George Bush.
Yeah.
That's the mentality. It was all Bush's fault.
I can keep regaling you this thing. And the next thing I guess people will say regarding this whole gender, regarding the whole race thing is that basically the Republicans have become racist. Well, I guess the reason in the 60s that people went from the Democratic Party in the South to the Republicans because it was mostly Christian fundamentalism. The Democratic Party was moving away from that and they didn't like it. But, you know, I don't want to take everybody's time today, but I do want to, because my co-hosts over here, I want to hear what they have to say. But I'm going to leave you guys sort of with this. The big push right now is the Latino vote. And there was some very interesting information that has come out. The Democratic Party and a group called the Advancement Project has put out a report saying that voting rules are going to deter 10 million Hispanics from exercising their voting rights. Well, here seems to be the truth. The National Institute for Latino Policy says without any kind, there's no information to give you a viable projection of how many Latinos would actually vote. So that it's sort of bogus. But here's even better. The Pew Hispanic Center says that 71% of Latinos, registered voters, support laws that require voters to show photo ID, which is almost the same as the national, which is 77%. And then a whopping, like, listen to this, 97% of Latinos surveyed said they're confident they have the ID to vote.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think when people say, well, we got to cater to the Latino vote by being against voter ID, I would be insulted as a Latino because many Latinos are here legally and they believe others should be. So we said race, gender, and class. Mike, maybe you'd like to say a little bit about class, and then we want to hear some of the proactive things that you brought.
Well, those are some very good points and, information that a lot of people don't know. And so very interesting. It's this whole thing has just been, I was able to vote in the first election for Ronald Reagan in 1980. So, and I've not missed an election since then. And I still think that's probably the best vote I was ever able to cast. Very proud to have cast that vote.
He won in California too.
And back then they were using the class argument. I've never seen the class argument used more viciously, more indiscriminately in this election cycle than, an attack on people who are working hard, successful. It's basically to the Democratic view that it's a zero sum game. If you have somehow succeeded, it's only because you push somebody down. There's no such thing as a rising tide, lifts all ships in their mindset. And they do that time and time again. They use static economic analysis. Hey, if we raise taxes on this group of people, their behavior will stay the same and we'll get more taxes. Usually, of course, the tax revenue goes down and you get less revenue. So, economic intelligence doesn't seem to really exist there. But what I wanted to talk about, first of all, is that, every election cycle, people talk about how important it is. And, that we're at a crossroads. This is the defining election. However, when we start talking about debt levels approaching those of Spain and Greece, $1 trillion a year. See, the thing that's I think that the Democrats benefit from is they throw so many things out there that you're overwhelmed. You can't focus on any one thing. And $1 trillion is an inconceivable number. We can say the number, but we here sitting in this room don't really know what it is.
Absolutely.
We can just say it. It's incredible amounts of money. And just think about the morality of spending that money now so that your kids will not have it. When we spend that money, hundreds and billions of dollars are now being spent on interest that cannot be spent on programs to help the poor, to have a strong military. All the things that we say we want to do, we now have hundreds of billions. We are spending more on interest now, or right around the same amount in interest on our national debt as we spend on all of national defense. There's nothing compassionate about that. That's not a compassionate agenda. And if you put your head into it a bit and think about things, a lot of the things that are said to be compassionate aren't compassionate. But what I want to do is sort of target my comments at folks that have a belief in God and believe that loving people and reaching out to people is the most important thing. And I agree. A lot of times conservatives can come across as harsh and, hey, I don't want to give my money up. And, you know, and that's the media certainly works hard to portray that image. But there are plenty of people that are conservative that just walk right into it and give that impression. So what I'd like to say is I think that the compassionate viewpoint from a Christian perspective is to be responsible and to understand how you vote. If you think about it, if you believe in a certain type of moral code, you know, that the family, you know, chastity, things of those natures, things that you believe build a strong society, have a foundation, and you believe in those things, yet at the government is spending hundreds of billions of dollars to promote a different viewpoint than yours, how compassionate it is to let the government elect people. And you're the government, by the way. You are the government. This is not like the time of the
Bible. We're supposed to be a representative government.
This is not the time of the Bible when most of the people could not vote. Everybody here is the government, and you have a right to vote, and you need to vote because it's not just money being wasted. It's being money being used to create a culture of defendants, money that's being used to destroy soul-destroying poverty, money that's being used for bad purposes. So when you do not educate yourself and you do not vote, you're not being compassionate. And I would argue that, you know, if you look at the Bible talking about pure religion is, you know, for the widows and the orphans. Well, widows and orphans right now, if children are born in a single household in many parts, in many cases, they are vulnerable to being victims. They're vulnerable to being preyed upon. All these things here, and we have a culture right now that is subsidizing and promoting out of wedlock births. It's the number one predictor of people being suicide rate, the number one predictor of crime, number one predictor of people getting involved with drugs, abortion, everything. Single parent households are devastating to children in general. Not to say that there aren't great single parents out there, but in general, it's devastating. And we right now have a culture right now that is promoting that and supporting it and subsidizing it. You can talk all you want about it, but when you sit there and say, hey, we are going to give you money to do this, there's a lot of things. So you need to be compassionate. You need to be educated.
Okay, we'll be back. I'm here with Mike Friedenberg and Matt Simone and Dana Wright. And Nick Lane, our board ops, I think he's burning to say something too. And I invited him to share some comments. So I'll welcome Nick to our show. It's kind of funny welcoming Nick. There would be no show if it wasn't for Nick since he's operating the board for us. But we'll be right back.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's weekly column for Washington Times Communities. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net, S-I-E-G-E-L, bobsiegel.net. Here, you can download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Okay, I'm here with Mike Friedenberg, Dana Wright, Matt Simone, and Nick Lane, our board op, who's very insightful on this side of the mic, too. And Nick, you wanted to respond to some of the things that Mike was saying. He was talking about how our tax dollars taken mandatorily by the government can sometimes go to promote things we as citizens don't even believe.
You see it every time you turn on the TV, basically. I mean, and the thing that really got me with what he was saying was I'm a strong detacher of the media. And when he brought up how hard that the media tries to portray
the leftist, you mean the leftist
image
point of view?
The leftist image of a conservative.
Right.
How hard they try to push
the conservatives
that image.
Are always these dumb bumpkins, or they're these fascists, something like that.
Yeah, that they're these racist people who sleep with their money and, you know, dive into their money bins like Uncle Scrooge. And I mean, it's ridiculous.
You don't have one of those, Nick? No.
I don't. I could make a joke, but I'm not going to make it on air. But it's absolutely ridiculous how broad of a brush that they're just so willing to paint, and how they get away with it too.
Yeah.
All the time on television, every single time they push these lies out. And I'm not saying that it's just the left, it's the right as well, but you hear more of the left than you do the right. And how they just pass this as truth, and how many people buy it. My own parents buy this crap.
Yeah, and they like to say things like, well, in the days of Leave It to Beaver and Andy Griffith and Father Knows Best, the man could do no wrong. Okay, but now he can do no right. You can just see how the family's being torn down. If there's something between a man and a woman on a sitcom, the husband's the idiot, the wife is the wise one. But if it's between children and parents, the children are the wise ones, the parents are the idiots.
Are the idiots, yeah.
If it's between black and white, the white guy's the idiot. If it's between gay and straight, the straight guy's the idiot. I mean, you can just predict this stuff. Now, Mike, I know you had this was just one of several things you had to say as you're giving your pitch here about how our tax dollars are at work, but I want to be able to go back to you and some of the other thoughts that you had.
Well, it's a principle of being shrewd, and there is a biblical idea of being shrewd, which is being wise. It's not like being shrewd, like being crafty and conniving, but it's being wise. And how wise is it for you to be involved, let's say, with a church ministry helping the homeless? And you work the whole year, and maybe your ministry raised $10,000 or $15,000, $20,000 to feed the homeless, to do some really good stuff. And I'm that is great, and that's things the church should be doing. Yet that church may have a congregation, say a larger congregation, that literally pays hundreds of millions of dollars in taxes, and some of those programs that they're paying for may actually be helping to promote homelessness.
So they're paying for programs that are creating the very situations which need ministry, so their money's coming out on two ends.
So let's expand our definition about what pure religion is and being shrewd. You cannot be truly compassionate in this country where you are the government. Truly, you cannot be. You can have all the good ooey-gooey feelings and the feelings of love and being nice and la-da-da, but if you are not voting intelligently to what your government's doing, you're not compassionate, because if you're voting in people and you're voting for propositions and ballot initiatives that do the opposite of what you really want to see done, in fact, you're not compassionate. You could say you're compassionate all day. You could spend all day devoting your time, but ultimately, there's a bias by a certain standard. You're not being compassionate.
Yeah, I mean, misplaced compassion, it might be well-intentioned, but it could be a dangerous thing.
Well, you know, what we're finding out here is that we're just usurpers. What we do is we usurp our rights. I mean, think about it. All these programs that the government is trying to do, they say they can do it better than the private sector. They say they can do it better than individuals. But the bottom line
is— Just walk into any post office and you'll know that's not true.
I mean, but the bottom line is, let's take responsibility for it. So I'm going to say it. The church failed. The church was responsible for all these social programs. And eventually what we did, we just sort of turned it over to the government.
We ceded it.
And we basically, we usurped that authority. And basically we are here because we allowed it to happen.
And yet for over 100 years, the church was meeting the needs of the orphan, the widow, the poor, before we had government programs.
Yeah.
So, and the government, how much of the government goes toward bureaucracy? Obama just announced he's going to create a new position called the minister. What was it? Secretary of Business. As if we don't already have a Secretary of Commerce, and as if we even needed that.
You know, I think Mike is absolutely right. The bottom line is this: that we have to start using our heads. You know, people all the time say is that we're Christians, we're way too emotional, and we think with our hearts, and it's all about this faith. But you know, some of us have brains. And I think we need to use our brains and we need to read things. But the problem is we're lazy. I mean, honestly, the way this stuff got away from us is we became lazy. And it's just like it says in the Word of God. When God sent Joshua into the promised land, the nation Israel, he said, I'm going to give you every place your foot steps. We just stopped stepping.
Yeah. And there's also something, I think there's something in the Bible says something about like knowing God with all your heart and all your soul. And I think there's another part. What was that other part there?
Something I think the word starts with
your mind. So I think it's okay to use your mind and in combination with your heart. And, you know, and it's a balancing act, but I'm challenging people out there to sit there and understand that your government is spending your money in a way that if you look at it, you may just find that it's contradicting what you really would like to see accomplished. And in a big way, where you're donating $100 to try to help something, the government is doing $10 million to go against what you're trying to do with your $100. Yeah. I mean,
okay, now, obviously our tax dollars are being used for things that we don't agree with or things that concern us. In our last few minutes, let me ask of each of you, what policy of this administration concerns you the most? What do you think could be the most dangerous if it continues another 4 years? I'll go back to Dana. Do you have which one just stands out the most that concerns you?
For me, the biggest one would be that he has a different vision for our country than I do. And I don't want to see that continue on.
What would you say is his vision for this country?
He wants it to be more of a whole government situation where people, there's less independence in what we're doing and people working hard and having their own businesses and developing, being entrepreneurs is not really honored anymore. And I think we are starting to see a relaxed attitude. We're seeing a lot of people that are getting money from the government and not really where there's not a lot of motivation to get up and go get that job and do better. And I want to get back to where people are self-motivated to do better because they get something out of it and they get to keep it.
You notice when he's talking about creating new jobs, it's always government, not always, but 99% of the time government jobs. And yeah, we need some government jobs, but how about you, Matt? What's concerning you the most? What policy? I know there's a lot with this guy.
Well, I'll start here. He believes he can fix things. And I think he has no concept of foreign policy. I think that's our relationship with Israel. But I'll tell you what, other than policy, the thing that scares me in the next 4 years, if he becomes president, he may appoint 3 to 5 Supreme Court justices, and that's going to change us for decades.
And look at those crackerjack appointees he's given us so far.
That's my biggest issue right now.
How about you, Mike?
Well, what Dana said and Matt said are very true. And I could throw another one in there, and just basically, he is an internationalist. And I don't want to go, you know, crazy, you know, conspiracy stuff, but he really doesn't believe the United States is exceptional. Yeah. He would love to see us under international law. He would like to see us kowtowing to the United Nations. You know, that moral
they're
authority
here,
body
Mike.
That it is.
They're here. They're voter.
They're monitoring our voting booth now. I mean, so the thing is that he is internationalist, and if 4 more years, he will do everything he can to further cede our autonomy to what I consider to be immoral national, you know, international bodies of international stature that have no moral authority.
Well,
from
my
perspective,
even if he loses, there's going to be a lame duck session, and he and Hillary are pushing. So they're trying to do an international law from the United Nations to make it against the law to speak against Islam, and that kind of international law comes under our treaties section, and they only need the approval of the Senate. Even if the Republicans retake the Senate, the Democratic Senate and Obama, they can go out with a blaze, remember? Congress won't be able to do anything about it.
And add on our Second Amendment rights the same way coming from the UN trying to do that same
Absolutely.
Thing.
The very idea of the UN having moral authority when Syria was once the head of their security council. I'll say this again. The United Nations should be closed down. The building should be turned into a public toilet. And that'll be the first real good that it ever did. Okay. Thank you, all of you, for coming in. Matt Simone, Mike Friedenberg, Dana Wright, they will be with us again. I will be with you next week. Next week, I'm either going to be in a great mood and I'm going to play one celebration song because Obama lost, or if he wins, I just don't think I'm going to say anything about it next week. Doesn't mean it won't be on my mind. Doesn't mean I won't still write columns about it.
I'm going to just act like it didn't happen. I'll have hysterical amnesia.
Denial.
Yeah, denial ain't just a river in Egypt. We'll see you next week.
Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.